Good evening, folks. You're listening once again to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. I was out shooting over the weekend, both days, all day long. And I got to tell you, I've just got some marvelous rifles that I love to shoot. Of course, my 375 H&H Magnum, Ackley improved, is still a tack driver. It's incredible, and it's incredibly fun to shoot. I was breaking in my 308 that I've had for a long time, but have never fired before. And I had purchased a new scope for that rifle, which has a 75 millimeter objective lens. It's called an ATN scope. And I had purchased one before, and when I got it, it was a piece of junk. And they said that that was a big mistake, and you know, send it back and we'll replace it. And so they replaced it with another piece of junk. The second one I got, it looked okay. Looked, you know, like the other one, looked like it had been used and abused and, you know, had places where people stripped out screws with screwdrivers and stuff. And the second one looked brand new and looked fine, looked wonderful. But it was a piece of junk. Went out and the rifle was firing so far to the left that when we kept bringing the bullet right with the windage on the scope, we went as far as we could possibly go and it wouldn't turn anymore. And the bullet had just barely hit the left edge of the target. And the windage reticle in the scope was so far to the left that you couldn't even see it anymore. So that one's going back. It's junk. I highly recommend that you never touch one of those scopes for any reason whatsoever, period. Ever. It's junk. Total junk. I've had two now. See, the first time I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. When I buy something and it turns out to be junk, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I'll send it back and exchange it. And if I get a piece of junk the second time, then it's junk. No doubt about it. So these scopes called ATN, don't touch them with a 10-foot pole. My experience is that they're junk. Just total junk. Don't even, well, you just heard what happened to me. First time they sent me something that was used and abused and just totally screwed up. The second time they sent me something that was so far off the mark that it could never be any good. And my Browning, my BAR, my Belgium Browning is still a tack driver. Love shooting that rifle, too. It's a 30-06. And what else did I take with? I took my 22, my Remington 555, which is it's a classic semi-automatic Remington 22 long rifle. Let me see. That's 1, 2, 3, 4. That's it. That's what I took. And fired all day Saturday and all day Sunday and got sunburned and had a great time. Maintaining my proficiency with my weapons. And it's fall. You see, I don't look at the month or the when they say it's going to be fall. See, according to the calendar, it's not really fall yet. But according to the light, it is. I can tell the change of seasons by the change in the light. And right here, right now, in these mountains, it's fall. Because the light has already changed to the fall colors. And I love it. I love fall, and I love spring. But out of all of the seasons, I think fall is my favorite. It's my most favorite season of the year. My second is spring. Winter or summer, I like them both, but I like fall first, spring second, and, you know, winter and summer is okay with me. I think if I was at the North Pole, I would not like winter, or at the South Pole. And I think, you know, living on the equator, I probably wouldn't be too thrilled with summer either, because I don't like extreme heat, and I don't like extreme cold. But I don't mind cold, and I don't mind, you know, warm weather with a few hot days scattered around, just as long as it's not consistent. That I don't like at all. Well, hold on, folks. I'll be right back after this short pause. Phones tonight. We have open topic, open subject. 520-333-4578 is the number. Have you noticed how much we've been bushwhacked? And we have. We have been bushwhacked, folks. George Bush is a closet Bill Clinton. He's broken almost every campaign promise that he ever made during the election campaign. And now he's negotiating with Fox, the president of Mexico, to open up the border between the two countries. And that's what's going to happen. You wait and see. They're implementing a section of the NAFTA agreement, which calls for a border area called, at least, Border 21 or Border 22. I talked about it on the broadcast before and read to you the actual text of the NAFTA agreement. Where it's going to have its own administration, and the border will just, like, disappear. 520-333-4578 is the number. Phones are open. Take your calls for the whole hour. Remind everybody that this is the month of September, and we need your donations now. So please send in your donations if you haven't already done so, and send them to HOTT, H-O-T-T, care of 101.1 FM, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. That's HOTT, H-O-T-T. In care of 101.1 FM, and no, 101.1 is not on the air. Can't afford to run that station anymore, so we're not. But we still have the address. P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. Remember, we can only accept blank money orders, cash, gold, or silver coins. No checks. No money orders made out to HOTT or me or anybody else. We won't accept them. We'll send them right back to you. Let's go to the phones. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hey, I heard you talking about your guns. You know, it's a good thing you get out there and practice whenever you can.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was out there today shooting my 357 Magnum, but my favorite rifles are, well, I got a Springfield 0383, which is the target rifle of bolt-action rifles, and I got an Enfield, which is the combat rifle of bolt-action rifles. And a Mauser 98, which is the hunting rifle of bolt-action rifles. I mean,
what is that Mauser 98 fire? Is that the original 98 Mauser?
98K, German issue, World War II.
What caliber is it?
8mm Mauser.
Okay.
Which is comparable to 30-06.
Yeah.
The 303 is similar to our 30-40 Krag.
I don't know anything about a 303.
Well, it's do you ever shoot a Krag rifle?
No.
It's 30-40 and Krag, and the 303 shoots a 311 bullet, but it was used quite a time for the British Empire.
Yeah, it was the British combat rifle.
Yeah, and a lot of them were made here by Savage, as Lend-Lease and the rest of it. And in fact, the guy Lee that designed it, he was an American.
Hmm.
And he designed it, and the British adopted it.
Well, I know Savage makes good rifles.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And but it's a lot of fun. You ever tried to shoot the 8mm Remington Magnum?
No.
Oh, that shoots an 8mm or 32 caliber bullet. I mean, like.
I've never been into the European calibers or any of those things at all. Period.
Remington developed it.
And I'm not trying to say that there's anything wrong with them. I just never have been into those at all. 8mm is a European caliber. Remington may have had something to do with introducing the caliber over here, but 8mm was used in Europe for many, many years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, this Remington came out with it, and they named it. It should be called 32 Remington Magnum, but they called it 8mm.
Mm-hmm.
And that cartridge is a third longer than a 30-06 cartridge. And it throws 180, 200-grain bullet way out there at, like, over 3,000 feet per second. I mean, it's a cannon. And I was a gunsmith, and I put a while back and had a gun shop, and I put a compensator on one of those and iron sights on it, plus a scope mount on it for a customer. And we had to put a muzzle brake on it to tame the recoil because it was so bad it would rattle your fillings loose. You know, but it reached way out there. He shot a mule deer in California this some years ago. I don't know, he was from one mountain to the next with it. It was just unbelievable. And I forget how many yards it was, but it took it down one shot. It was just incredible. But my favorite guns, I have a couple of Mac 90s, one with a heavy barrel and a bipod, and two Remington 30-06 7.42s, a carbine and a rifle with, you know, see-through mounts and 3-9 power scopes on it, and they work great as deer rifles, and I think especially in a situation where you have urban combat and the rest of that, because it's semi-auto, and you can get 8-round magazines for it, and it's good. And
you're talking about Mac 90?
Yeah. No. Well, no, the Remington 7.42 and 30-06.
Oh, okay.
Or you can get one at 308 too. That's good.
Yeah.
But the Mac 90, I got two of them, and they work every time.
Mac 90 is a good weapon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Based upon the AK-47 design, which is one of the best combat rifles ever made in the history of the world.
Yeah.
It does not get the credit it deserves.
Oh, it's a real sweetheart. Well, I just wanted to add that in. I'm going to get going and let somebody get in there.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Thanks for calling. You know, what I lament, seriously, folks, is they're making all these rifles with no iron sights on them, and I think that's a shame. What if you're out in the field and you break your scope, or, you know, all kinds of things can go wrong with a scope, no matter who makes them, no matter how long the guarantee is, no matter how rugged they are, things can go wrong. And there you are with no sights. And I wish they would stop that, because iron sights do not get in the way of mounting a scope if the iron sights are placed on the rifle properly. I don't know why they're not doing that. So the first thing I do, if I have to buy a rifle that you know, they won't put iron sights on, or comes with no iron sights, I always take it to the gunsmith and have some good iron sights put on there. And sometimes that works out really well, because I can choose the kind of sights that I want rather than having to accept whatever the manufacturer put on there. But, gosh, as a boy for so many years, that's all I had. We didn't have a lot of money in our family, so nobody could afford to buy a scope. That was out of the question. And so you learned to shoot with iron sights, or you didn't learn to shoot at all. Well, you know, one of the two. And I learned to shoot real well with iron sights. I missed them on some rifles, and like I said, with mine, I always have iron sights put on simply for the fact that things can go wrong with scopes. And if something goes wrong, you're left without sights, then the rifle is pretty useless unless you're close enough to, you know, shoot from the hip, so to speak, and do the point and shoot thing. And if you're that close with a bolt action rifle, you're too close, you know, to walk out of it alive, probably. We're building a website for Qua Viet. Those of you who fought in Vietnam, if any of you fought anywhere in Northern I Corps, anywhere along the DMZ, any of the fire bases, Khe Sanh, Dong Ha, Quang Tri, Qua Viet, anywhere along the Qua Viet River, this website will be for all of you. For all of us, I should say. For all of us. Now, right now, we're building it on a computer here. We already have the URL. It's quaviet.org. It will be the Organization of Veterans of the Qua Viet River. Anybody who served in anywhere in that vicinity or who provided support for any of the units or organizations that fought in that area, this website is going to be for all of us. So right now there's nothing there except a picture of a patrol boat on the river and the little blurb that I wrote as the introduction to my new book, which is called Task Force Clearwater, Qua Viet, which was my unit. And so if you just want to go and take a look, you might want to check back in from time to time. It's going to be a big website, and it will include all the units and organizations that fought on or near the Qua Viet River, whether you were actually based in our base camp called Qua Viet or not, doesn't make any difference. From Qua Viet all the way up to Khe Sanh, and from Quang Tri all the way up to the DMZ, all of those organizations and military units, regardless of what branch of the service, I consider to have been a part of the Qua Viet experience, if you want to call it an experience. So we're making that website. It's called Qua Viet, CUAVIET.org. There's not much there right now, but there will be a huge site devoted to all of the people who fought in that area, and with pictures, and we've got lots and lots of photographs, lots of stories, there's lots of units and organizations. So don't be a stranger, gang, you know. Circle on in and check it out from time to time. It will be growing and changing constantly. Like I said, there's not much there right now, but there will be. By the way, the movie Born on the 4th of July, all of that Vietnam action occurred on the Qua Viet River. Wilson was wounded during a very famous battle in which a small group of Marines faced probably 7,000 North Vietnamese Army regulars. Wilson was actually wounded at a place called Whiskey 9 on the river. Our boats were instrumental in providing fire support and pulling out wounded Marines and making sure that they got to medical attention. It was the battle lasted for about 3 days. One of the fiercest combat actions of the entire Vietnam War, by the way. So that'll give you a few clues as to what was going on where I fought the war. 520-333-4578 is the number. The phones are open. You're taking your calls. Open topic, open subject for the rest of the hour. Good evening. You're on the air.
This is Tom from South Carolina.
Hi, Tom.
You know, from time to time, you mentioned that people don't seem to know how their government works.
Yep, that's true.
Well, I think they don't know how a lot of things work.
That's also
true. There was a time when you could open up an automobile and look at the engine. You could open the engine up and understand what you were looking at.
Yep.
But so many things these days have gotten so complicated that I think people just give up. They don't try to understand it. They just let the experts do it for them. And that even comes to their government. They want specialists to take care of it.
The government's not complicated at all. The whole thing is described in the Constitution. It's a very short document. It's easy to read and understand. Written by geniuses who debated the use of each word that's in there. And so the meaning would be clear, and is clear.
Well, of course, that's the government that we should have. But the government we do have is... seems like endless bureaucracy.
I wonder why.
Another.
But I wonder why. Could it be that we have that government that you described because everybody else doesn't know anything about the government described in the Constitution, so they've just allowed it to happen like a bunch of idiots?
Well, that's pretty much what happened. We allowed things to happen to us.
That's exactly what happened.
I don't know exactly what the solution is. Of course, about government, there's much you can learn, but when it comes to something like, say, a computer, it's really hard to learn what's going on in there. The Amish kind of tried to protect themselves against losing their culture by just giving up any attempt to come into modern era, with all of the things that are complex. Of course, I think that's a mistake, too. What we really need is to understand our equipment. So that we're not left behind, so that we're not dehumanized. We can grasp it, we can use it, and we can feel safe and secure in that.
I don't get the relationship between computers and the Constitution. I'm sorry, but that totally escapes me.
Okay.
You don't want to try to bridge that gap?
Well, modern Americans. Of course, it didn't just happen here recently. It's been happening a long time. But so has the technological advances that have left people sort of wondering, what's in the black box? And they're treating their government pretty much the same way.
The government has become complicated. The government is described in the Constitution.
Well, if you go to try to build a house or something, you have to get permits from this place and permits from that place.
Uh-huh.
Somebody has to come out and check your soil to see if you can put in a septic tank.
Because the people collectively, not understanding what the government should be, have allowed all this to happen. And they've allowed it to go so far that there's only one way to reinstate constitutional Republican government, to restore the government to what it's supposed to be. The Founding Fathers knew all about that. They knew that this would happen, as a matter of fact. They warned us about it, and they gave us the perfect instrument to take care of it. It's called the Second Article in Amendment.
You know, Jefferson said something to the effect that if cities ever got control of the government, we were up the creek.
Yeah.
And we have a much larger population than we had then. We have infrastructure that people are dependent upon. And it's as though cities have kind of spread out and taken over even the rural areas. There are people who live in rural areas are more citified than they used to be. They're not as self-reliant. Consequently, as we bump into each other and squabble over things, everybody says there ought to be a law. There ought to be a law. Politicians pass the laws, and here we are entangled in them.
Well, I guess a lot of people really like that. I guess they like being slaves. But there's enough of us who understand what this country is supposed to be and understand how tyranny has taken over and robbed us of our birthright. We're living under a state of treasonous tyranny. And eventually, we will take matters into our own hands and we will restore constitutional Republican government with or without the help of all the idiot sheeple out there who don't seem to care.
So it's going to be a very small number of people, small percentage that will see things the way you see it.
I'm afraid.
Because lifestyles to a great extent dictate, I think, the way a person thinks about his life.
Well, you're wrong about that. There's millions of us, and history has demonstrated that you only need 3 to 5% of any given population in order to prevail in any conflict.
Well, I hope that will be borne out as the case.
Why? You don't sound like you're going to be on our side. You sound like you're one of the people who's sort of involved in all this stuff and not going to resist it.
Oh, I would tend to resist, but
it's not what it sounds like. It sounds like you're preaching give up.
No, but I don't think that you can come out blatantly and just, you know, say to heck with it all and
I think that's exactly
I think use your very
who cares? If we have enough people, it doesn't matter. Who cares what the government says?
I think you're going to have to care because it's going to have to be done very carefully.
No, it's going to have to be done by the force of arms, and there ain't nothing careful about that. People are going to die. The political process failed us a long time ago. It does not work for us, period.
You could imagine a scenario where you come out with arms and this is just what the government wants.
Yeah, I can certainly imagine that. That's exactly what the Founding Fathers did. That's exactly what they did. And by God, King George and the government in England had an awful lot of bad things to say about them. And they won, didn't they?
Well, it was a little bit close for a while there.
Well, any war can be close. Wars are not set in stone as to who's going to be the winner, and anything can tip the scale.
Well, I think to a great extent we need different philosophy. We are working with some mistaken ideas.
I don't think so.
Well, for one thing, there's so many religious people who seem to think that life on earth is a short moment compared to eternity, and they will say something to the effect that God will take care of me, and they won't involve themselves.
God won't take care of them unless they take care of doing the right thing.
Well, it's being preached, I'm afraid.
Remember what Jesus said? He said, my kingdom is not of this earth. I don't care about the affairs of man. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and render unto God what is God's. My kingdom is in heaven.
Well, now it sounds like you're on the other side, that you wouldn't fight because your kingdom is in heaven.
No. I said Jesus' kingdom is in heaven. I don't have a kingdom. I'm here on this earth, and while I'm here, I have to do the right thing, which means resist and overcome tyranny, overcome the bad. I've got to do that.
Well, I agree with you, but I think an awful lot of it needs to be done through words, as Paine would have done, you know. Not preaching a violent overthrow, but rather...
No. See, you're having problem listening. Who said violent overthrow?
Violent restoration is how you would put it.
That's exactly right. That's the only way it's going to be accomplished. If you don't understand... ...that we're talking about through the political process, and that the only way to restore a constitutional Republican government is through the force of arms, you're already a slave.
like I say, it was pretty close with the American Revolution. I'd much rather have people understanding, you know, with a new philosophy.
Well, then if you lived back there, you would have been preaching to them, hey, don't do this revolution, man. We can solve our problems with King George. And you know what would have happened? We'd be a socialist country under the Parliament of England listening to Tony Blair preach to us about why we have to pay 86% of everything we earn into taxes.
How much tax was it that was on tea that was thrown into the harbor? It was very little, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But it was enough to make people mad.
Yeah, that's right. How much are we paying now?
A whole lot more.
A hell of a lot more.
Well, Bill, I love to listen to your program, and I consider you quite a professor when it comes to things about the Constitution, a grouchy professor, and it's really quite refreshing to hear you just tell it like it is and tell people off. And you've told me off before, and it's been fun.
Well, it's the only way to do it. You don't tell the truth by making people feel good, because the truth doesn't ever make anybody feel good.
But one thing that I think, and I've spoken to you about it before, it seems like perhaps old military officers are like this. They just have to, decide what people have to do, and let's do it. And I think when it comes to your point of view concerning whether we landed on the moon or not, that I hope you will reconsider and reconsider and reconsider.
I don't have to reconsider. I can prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that we never set foot on the moon, at least not with the evidence that NASA has given us. All of those photographs and videotapes are fake.
It's an awful lot for the government to expect to be able to pull something off like that.
They did it. They did it. They did it, and you fell for it, and you're still falling for it.
There's so many people in NASA that had something to do with it, hands-on. How come they're not coming forth?
Why don't you ask them why they're lying to the whole world?
I will reconsider if you will.
I don't have to reconsider. I just told you something. You're not listening. I can prove absolutely that all of the photographs and videotapes NASA has shown us to prove that they went to the moon are fakes. They were never taken or filmed or videotaped or snapped on the moon. They were done right here on this earth.
But I've got a kinfolk that worked for NASA, and they fooled him, huh? But he was working there.
Yeah, probably did. Either that, or he's fooling you.
No, I don't think so.
How do you know?
Well, I don't know, but...
That's what I thought.
you have to be judges of human nature to a certain extent. You can't know anything definitely. You can have a very high percentage.
Oh, come on, man. I just told you. Three times already, I can prove absolutely that all of the videotape and photographs NASA claims they took on the moon are fake.
Well, if fake is pretty good, it looks real to me.
It looks real to you because you don't know how to determine if it's fake or not. I have a degree in photography.
Yeah.
I suggest you just go take a few basic photography lighting classes.
So the lighting has something to do with
lighting
it.
Lighting has a hell of a lot to do with it. But that's not all.
Well, I appreciate you talking to me about it.
You're welcome.
I'll probably talk to you about it again sometime.
Well, if you want to talk to me about the moon, you'll be spitting in the wind. I've already told you four times now. I can prove it absolutely. If I can prove something absolutely, there's nothing you can do to convince me otherwise.
Well, the astronauts all lied. The people there at Cape Canaveral where they sent it off.
Yeah.
They didn't know what they were sending off?
You don't have any understanding of the way the military and secrecy works. People only know what they have a need to know and nothing else. Period.
Well, it seems like an awful, incredible amount of people...
Listen to me. I don't care what it seems like or what it looks like or what you believe or what your uncle says. For the sixth time now, I can prove absolutely that all of the pictures and videotape NASA claims they shot on the moon are fakes. Now, when is that going to sift through between your ears?
Well, it's kind of hard to get in there because, you know, I've been conditioned to think otherwise. And
oh, so you admit you're brainwashed.
Well,
that's it. Good night, my friend. Thanks for calling. Finally, we get the admission. Well, it's because I've been conditioned to think this way. Good evening. You're on the air.
I was just waiting for you to say, Bill. This is Tim, Bill. I was just waiting for you to say that you have a degree in photography and you can prove that.
Yeah.
But you said that and it still didn't sink in.
Still didn't sink in. Still didn't sink in. But how'd you like that admission? Well, I guess I believe it because I've been conditioned to believe it.
Well then, what was the point of the conversation then if he believes he's brainwashed?
I have no idea. He admitted he believes it because he's brainwashed.
Well, at least he admitted it. That's the first step, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
He's
not a bad guy.
No.
I like him, as a matter of fact. If I thought he was a bad guy, he would never would have stayed on that long.
Oh, I know. Let's talk about firearms for a minute. Weatherby has always had the reputation for being a real high-dollar rifle.
Mm-hmm. They are high-dollar rifles.
Well, these days they make a Mark V
mm-hmm.
with a synthetic stock.
Yeah, that's their downscale version for the average upscale hunter.
yeah. I got one for about 5.5. It's a very, very accurate little rifle.
Yeah, they are. They're good rifles. Nothing wrong with them at all.
And Redfield, the scope company, I think it was the EPA that put them out of business. The EPA went in and told them they had to do this and they had to do that, or it was OSHA or somebody. And they said, no, we won't. We'll close the doors. And they closed the doors about 2 years ago, and about a year ago I got a 32 power Redfield scope for about $350, I think, is what I paid for it, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I sure do like that combination.
Well, great. That's wonderful.
Set up really good, but like you say...
What caliber is your rifle?
I got the .30-06 because of the...
.30-06 is a great caliber. It's actually on the low end of what you would call a Magnum cartridge. And for years it was our battle cartridge. That's what our GIs used in World War II.
I really got that caliber because of the availability of the ammunition. Every little feed store and everything out in my neck of the woods, everybody has .30-06 ammunition.
Yeah.
So I don't think there'll ever be a shortage, you know, for store-bought ammunition for that rifle.
I don't know if there will be or not. I have 1,000 rounds for every caliber that I own, and then I have 1,000 rounds of empty brass, primers, and bullets to be able to reload, and powder, to be able to reload those 1,000 rounds once they've been fired. Now, the way I shoot, in a war that lasted 10 to 15 years, I wouldn't use all that ammunition.
Right.
Because I don't even think of pulling the trigger or squeezing off a round unless I know that bullet's going to hit its target. If I don't know it's going to hit its target, I won't do it.
Well, there's no sense in wasting the bullet.
No, but there's not. But that seems to be the attitude that most people have. Have you been to a firing range lately?
No, Bill. I don't go to places like that. My firing range is my backyard.
Yeah.
I'm one of the fortunate people that have just a little bit of land out here that you know, I built a nice berm out here, and it's not real long, but it'll go about 140 yards,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I can, anything over that, I'll just have to judge, you
yeah.
know, on how high to hold it.
Well, you don't have to judge. I mean, if you've got a ballistics program that you can run on the computer for the round that you're firing, it'll tell you for what your weapon is zeroed at. You can run a program for every 10 yards if you want to.
Right.
And it'll give you the exact hold over or hold under for every 10 yards or every 20 yards or 25 yards or 50 yards or 100 yards, whatever you need.
Right.
And so you don't ever have to guess anymore.
Well, that's what I guess I need to do is get on my computer and feed in what I've gotten.
Yeah, and you can get some free ballistic programs right off the Internet. They're called shareware. Or you can buy some that are really super... you know, and they don't cost that. They don't cost very much money.
Okay.
But they're invaluable because you need a good rangefinder, and you need a ballistics program to run on the ammunition that you shoot with your rifle, so that you'll know the exact holdover or hold under, or you need to listen to my series on shooting to know where to zero your rifle so that, you know, all the way out to zero, you just have to aim at one specific part of the body. And then beyond that, you shift it to another part of the body, and you'll never miss your target. Never.
Right. I got, I set it at 25 yards, and at 250, it's dead on. So that's anything beyond 250, I would just, in increments of an inch, 100 yards.
Well, that's not true, because after, when a bullet goes past your zero point,
uh-huh.
it begins to fall very rapidly.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Actually, it doesn't begin. It starts falling the instant it leaves the muzzle.
Right.
But you have zeroed your rifle so that between your muzzle and your zero point, the bullet is going to be traveling above the line of sight, except for, you know, a certain period
right in front
of the weapon before, you know, it starts traveling up. And then after it hits your zero point, it's going to be going below the line of sight, and it, you'll find that it will drop rapidly beyond that point.
I see. Okay. Okay.
So you need a program.
Okay. I'll have to check that out then.
Or get the table, the ballistic trajectory tables from the manufacturer that makes the round, the cartridge, and you can get those for free usually.
Okay. 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 Well, that's good. I guess I'll. I sent you a picture and a few bucks today, so
you'll be
getting it in the next few days.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for your service, Bill, and God bless you, my friend.
You're welcome. God bless you too.
Good night.
520-333-4578 is the number. We're taking your calls till the end of the hour. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. Grant from Nebraska.
Hi, Grant.
Appreciate your program and appreciate all you're trying to do to wake people up. The your whole excuse me, the whole thing on the moon situation, I find the same thing to be the case. I've done a lot of photography myself, and the whole question of the falling off of light with distance, which if you had the whole face of the moon lit up, you wouldn't have any intense light right close to the subject and a fall off.
Mm-hmm.
It just isn't possible, and you wouldn't have the crossing shadows. It's just not even a possibility.
Yeah, in a lighting situation like on the moon where there's no atmosphere to diffuse the light from the sun is at least one-third brighter than the light that strikes the Earth here, anywhere where we're at.
Yeah, it'd be intense the whole area.
And with the latitude of the best film that they had, with the widest latitude that they had at that particular time, and we know exactly what film they used because Kodak exploited that, by screaming, you know, out the film that they used.
Right.
And it's impossible to have a perfect exposure in the sunlight and also see any kind of detail in the shadows. It's impossible to have an exposure showing detail in the shadows and not have washed out
in the light area.
Yeah, absolutely impossible. All of those photographs and all those, and videotape has no latitude at all.
Oh, no latitude at all there.
And all of that stuff was completely and totally faked. It's a fraud from day one. All of it, every bit of it is fraudulent. It's all a lie. It's all fake. Anybody who knows anything about photography can prove it in just a few seconds.
Sure. But he admitted he's got cognitive dissonance, right?
Yeah. Also in those pictures, they have three or four, sometimes five different light sources with shadows going in all different directions.
Right.
When the sun is supposed to be, you know, in one place and all shadows have to fall off.
Parallel.
Yeah. So It's ludicrous, and people who look at those pictures, and I can understand it, they have no understanding of the physics of light and light fall off, and any concept of studio lighting, or the latitude of film, and what film can do and cannot do, especially could not do back then. Well, they've got a handicap. I can understand why they can't see it, but It doesn't take much investigation to be able to figure it all out.
And you're trying, as far as trying to explain it to them.
Yeah. Plus, I don't know if you were listening, but we have videotapes made by NASA of, you know, their official footage, which we have a special machine called a broadcast video processor to where we can take the black out of the background. And you'll be amazed at what we see in there.
Oh, wow.
They're all shot inside of a studio somewhere. And there's props of the earth and in different sizes, and you can see parts of the structure of the studio and lighting stands, and it's a mess. It's a mess.
But it seems to be a consistent pattern with our government during the last 100 years. You know, lie.
Yep.
And people believe it, and...
It's because they're stupid. I've said it a million times. They're stupid.
Right. Well, I mean, the whole educational system has dumbed them down to the point where they can't...
You can't blame that on the education system. No. Everybody's born with a brain. They either use it or they don't.
Well, there's that. But, I mean, if there's a process where they're not even allowed to learn how to read because somebody confuses the heck out of them when they're a child,
then they go learn how to read some other way, or their parents teach them.
Well, with a little bit of luck, if they haven't been convinced to the point that they've been told so often they're dumb that they don't believe they'll ever learn to read.
Yeah, but let me tell you this. The Constitution does not guarantee anyone an education.
Oh, I would. I fully appreciate that. I mean, my children are.
We owe ourselves an education, which means
absolutely.
We have to teach ourselves and go and find the material and learn. So, blaming it on the education system, in my book, is not valid, unless we enjoy being stupid. And I don't.
Oh no! I mean, in my case, my children are taught at home, and that's been the case since they were, you know, I mean, for the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and they would never be otherwise. I'm not going to have my neighbors taxed to pay for my children's dumbing down. That won't work.
Yeah.
It's just a travesty to compel people to pay for garbage.
That's true. But why do they do it? Everybody seems to know it's garbage. Why do they continue to pay for it?
Because they haven't learned how to get out from under the taxes. I suppose they learn the alloidial title and...
It's because they're stupid.
True. We can't dispute that, though. Hopefully, we'll wake up enough soon enough that we'll be able to... Well, we will. Every day we wake up some more. And that's all we can do is just keep on waking as many up as we can.
Yeah.
You do a great job on that. In my own case, I'm inclined also with that .30-06.
It's a good rifle. It's a good cartridge. You can use a .30-06 for long range shooting.
Certainly. I've got some good black tip, and I figure that'll work pretty effectively.
What do you mean by black tip?
AP.
Okay.
But I figure when it gets difficult, that stuff should do a pretty good job.
Well, it should, yeah. It's what it's designed to do, penetrate armor.
Absolutely. Well, God bless you in your efforts, Bill.
Thank you.
Appreciate everything you're doing. And when I get on my feet, I will be sending you some help.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
God bless. Good night.
Thanks for calling. And by the way, folks, we need your contributions. Need them now. Send them to HOTT, H-O-T-T, in care of 101.1 FM, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. Okay? Remember, we can only accept blank money orders. You can put your name, on there from who it's from. That's okay with us. But do not put anybody or any name or any writing on the pay-to side. Don't do that. blank money orders, cash, or gold or silver coin. That's it. 520-333-4578 is the number. And I'm going to put on some music now because it appears broadcast and telling me what in the world? What are we listening to here? Oh, I know. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to put on some, I got a CD in there of an old broadcast. That's what you heard. Blew my mind. Heard myself talking to me. So I'm going to put on some music here and go turn off that answering machine because it appears that it's on. Well, first we'll take this call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Bill, Kevin in Nevada.
Hi.
Yes, you mentioned a little bit ago about rangefinders. I'm pretty good in my local area for judging distances, but I found when I get into unfamiliar areas, my ability, you know, drops off, you know, when I start getting out there. Would you recommend, like, the optical types or the laser and the binoculars? Or I'm really dumb on those. I have no idea.
Lasers are absolutely accurate, I mean, to, like, within inches.
Right.
Okay.
And I understand, you know, there's proper times to use them. If you get there and you study your area and use the laser rangefinders early, you know, where you're not really detectable. So you favor the laser types.
No, that's not what I said. You didn't let me finish.
Okay, sorry.
I said the laser types are accurate within inches, but they use batteries. Okay? Eventually, you're going to run out of batteries. So you want to have both kinds because the optical is not as accurate as a laser rangefinder. And to use an optical rangefinder, you usually have to know the height of something out there at the range that you want to measure. In other words, you have to know if there's a 6 foot high man there. Most optical rangefinders require that you know the height of something where you're going to be measuring the range.
Oh, okay, the only optical one I've ever used in the past is like for the bow hunters with the split screens, and you bring the screens together.
Okay, if you have one, that's called a split image. If you're using one of those, that's fine. Those are kind of hard to find, though.
Yeah, I thought they were. Their accuracy dropped off once you started getting out at any decent range.
Well, what decent range, you don't need to measure anything over 1,000 yards.
Right.
Because there's nobody listening to this broadcast is going to hit anything over 1,000 yards.
Yeah, I currently have a course set up out here at 1,000.
And most of the people listening are probably going to have trouble hitting something at 400 or 500 yards because they don't practice. And
yeah, well, I can ding that one every time.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I appreciate the information.
So I suggest you have both because the laser rangefinder is right on the money, and there's going to be times when you need to know the exact right down to a few inches range. And, you know, there's lots of reasons for having to do that sometimes.
Well, great. Thanks for the information. I'll put it on my list.
You're welcome.
Okay.
And you also want to have an optical rangefinder for the times when you can no longer get batteries. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Mr. Cooper. John from Michigan.
Hi, John.
You ran riverine patrols in the Nam.
Yeah.
I heard that the Army did so, too.
They did.
Could you one day speak to the differences between them?
No, because I never worked with the Army riverine units, and I have no idea how they operated.
I see.
But if you want to, if you're interested, there's a book called Brown Water Black Berets, and I believe that in that book they talk a little bit about the Army units that worked on the rivers, too.
Thanks for the information. One more thing. A lot of people have trouble with range finding. Have you ever seen a Shepherd scope? I'm sure you're familiar with them.
Yeah, I have seen a Shepherd scope, but let me tell you something. Unless you have a scope marked for the exact cartridge that you're going to be using with the exact length of barrel of your rifle that you're going to be using, they're not accurate.
Well, I've done pretty well with mine.
I'm not saying that you didn't.
The thing about it is this. It's best to zero it at 2 plus 100 yards. 200 or more yards?
Well, I'd have to see the scope and read the directions that come with the scope, and I'd have to know which cartridge and which barrel length the scope was calibrated for. Otherwise, it's not, listen to me carefully, it's not going to be accurate.
They have several different models for different cartridge ballistic coefficients that work within their different ballistic coefficients.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. You have to know what the scope is calibrated for.
Yeah.
You have to have exactly that length barrel, and you have to use only that cartridge. If you don't, that scope will not be accurate. Period. It can't be. It's impossible.
I've done well with my two.
But that's fine. I know people who do. I also know other people who have a longer or a shorter barrel than the one that was calibrated, that the scope was calibrated for. I also know people who hand load their own ammunition and use hotter loads, and the calibration of the scope does not work. Just because it's 308 don't mean it's going to work with that scope, because the scope's calibrated for 308. Which 308? How long was the barrel?
Well, it has to do with ballistic coefficients and velocities as to whether or not you use a P1, P2, or P3.
It has to do with this, and only this. Which cartridge, and how long was the barrel? And those are the only two. You can only use that length of barrel and that cartridge with that scope. If you use any other barrel length or cartridge, it's not accurate, period.
Well, then I suggest that they should get themselves one of those, what do they call those, a chronograph. Chronograph their loads.
My friend, you're full of it. Good night. This guy hasn't got the slightest idea what he's talking about. If you buy a Shepherd scope, put it on your rifle, and you don't have the cartridge or the barrel length that the scope was calibrated for to give you the ranges in this scope, you can have all the chronographs you want. All you want. The scope will still not be accurate. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. Good night, Annie Poo and Allison. I love you.